very perceptive analyst of American political and cultural change, and I want him to talk about very important questions about the future of the left in the United States, among others. Good program, especially good, I think, and I think you'll find it that way as well. So let's jump right in. Across the United States, people these days are reading about encampments by students, particularly those protesting the Israeli bombing and destruction of Gaza over the last several months, as I'm sure you're all familiar with. But there has also been going on another very important movement among college students and faculty that has gotten much less attention. And it's that one that I want to bring to your attention, because it's especially about economics in ways you might not have understood or seen before. I'm going to pick a particular case, that of Boston University in Boston, Massachusetts, but I could have picked any one of a long list, tens, dozens, maybe even hundreds of campuses where what I'm about to describe has been going on and is changing this country in basic ways. Graduate students who do an enormous amount of work in American colleges and universities these days, teaching more classes than ever before, undertaking academic service activities more than ever before, being paid less than academic workers of the past were paid, being provided with fewer benefits. It's a classic example of the system having found a way to be more profitable, to save on costs. The fact that this is done by quote-unquote non-profit institutions should fool absolutely no one. Here's what happened. Boston University decided that they want a union. That's right. They consider themselves workers. They are treated as workers. They are paid poorly as workers. Well, they wanted to improve their wages and working conditions, and they understood that banding together is a collective way of achieving that goal, and all of American history is a testimony to that fact. Okay, so they began back in the 2, 3, 4 years ago. They organized the Boston University Graduate Workers Union, BUGWU, and they affiliated with a national labor union, the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, and with its local 509 there at Boston University. In December of 2022, they had a union election, and all of the eligible graduate student workers were able to vote in that election, supervised by the National Labor Relations Board. The union won the election, but I want you to hear what the vote was. It was in favor 1,414 against 28. Let me do that again. 1,414 in favor of the union, 28 against. This should have shown anyone that the support for the union among the workers was overwhelming. A democratically chosen majority that made it clear that the workers there were united in demanding and deserving better wages and working conditions. Current average salary, $26,300. The union wanted $59,000 because that's what it calculated it cost to live in the Boston area. By July of 23, they had met, the two sides, but had reached no agreement. The union therefore took the next logical step and said they would strike for an agreement, just as they had feared that they might have to do. By that time, the university had increased its offer of salaries of $42,000, and by that time the union, with inflation, said it demanded $62,000. Okay, I don't want to bore you with the details. The strike continues as of the time we are making this program. The union struggles are there. The vote to strike stands, and the university is trying to prevent finally making a reasonable compromise with this union. Why am I bringing this to your attention? Because it has enormous consequences. Here is a population, graduate students, the future teachers of college students and university students, and many others across the country. And they are learning something they never learned before. What it means to be a worker. What it means to be treated badly. What it means to take out time and energy and money to build a labor movement and a union that can get a better outcome in bargaining with an employer. Understanding this is understanding the plight of the employee class, the vast majority of Americans. And most college students have long been kept away from all of that because they are working as students in an environment which rejects unions. Most faculty don't have unions. Most graduate students had no unions. Unions were a distant, unknown, repressed factor of college life, and it's left its mark on educated people in this country ever since. They have been unsympathetic to unions most of the last 50 years, subject to all kinds of anti-union, anti-worker ideology without it ever being identified. All of that is changing now. In the years ahead, college students will be taught by teachers who know what a union is, who know what a strike is. The hard parts, the good parts, the celebrations, the heartbreaks, all of that is going to be conveyed to the American student body in a way it never did before. The consequences will be profound. My next update is really an attempt to correct the monstrosity of lies coming out of the Biden administration and other places about the American economy. We even have to hear that there's such a thing as Bidenomics, the idea being that something is happening that is so spectacularly wonderful about the economy that we should celebrate Mr. Biden, that it's somehow his invention. This is simply nuts. The American economy is not doing well and hasn't been. If you choose a measure that makes the economy look good, then you're playing games by not showing that there are other measures just as important by which it isn't doing well. Let me give you an example. We've just had a release recently of the economic growth in the United States in the first quarter of 2024. That came in at a rollicking 1.6% on an annualized basis. In other words, if what we had in the first quarter continues, we will get 1.4%. The International Monetary Fund already realizes with such a bad performance in the first quarter of 2024, even if the rest of the year is quite good, you're going to get, and here's their estimate, 2.7%. growth of the American economy in 2024. Far from this being the best in the world, as the wild statements of Mr. Biden's circle suggests, let me tell you what the reality is for the People's Republic of China. No minor matter, the other biggest economy in the world. They're not experiencing a bad quarter, not at all. And you know what the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, estimates for the economic growth of China in this year? Ready? 4.6%. That's just shy of double the rate of the United States, if it can even achieve that. Best economic performance in the world? Nonsense. That hasn't been true for a long time in the United States, and it isn't true now. And endless repetitions of different numbers don't change that. By the way, the IMF estimates inflation in China this year will be 1%. What is the current estimate of the United States? 3.5 to 4% inflation. Yeah, doesn't look good there either, does it? And speaking of inflation, I want to remind everyone what an inflation is. It's an attempt of the people who run this society, the employer class. What the United States Census Bureau says is at most 3% of the people of the United States belong in the employer class. All the rest of us aren't in that class. But an inflation is a decision to raise prices by the employer class. Nobody else raises prices. If you're paying more for ice cream or a software program or a baseball game, that's because the employer in all of those industries chose to raise prices. Otherwise, an inflation doesn't happen. The rest of us, we don't set prices. We have to pay them. The employer class, 3%, are price makers. They set the price. The rest of us, we are price takers. They can make more money, more profits, if they raise prices. For them, the only question is, if I raise prices, I will sell fewer products because some people can't afford it. Will I make more on those I can sell at a higher price than the money I lose by selling fewer items? For them, that's it. They decide whichever the way that calculation goes. If it's profitable, they raise prices. For the rest of us, they don't care. They never did. That's why we have inflations. And we have them now. And the Chinese don't have them now. And you ought to think about what that means. We've come to the end of the first half of today's show. Please stay with us. We'll be back with an important interview with Jared Yates Sexton in our second half. Welcome back, friends, to the second half of today's Economic Update. I am very pleased and proud to bring back to our cameras and our microphones Jared Yates Sexton, someone that I'm beginning to work with and that I'm enjoying becoming a friend of, and of course I hope the same in reverse. So let me begin, Jared, by thanking you for spending this time with us.
Well, Dr. Wolf, the feeling is absolutely mutual, and you just absolutely made my day. It's good to join you again.
Let me remind our audience, who I hope remembers your last visit, briefly about you. You are a writer and a political analyst. You've authored a book called The Midnight Kingdom, A History of Power, Paranoia, and the Coming Crisis. That's a good part of why we bring you to these microphones. You are also a co-host of the Muckrake podcast, and you write for Dispatches from a Collapsing State. So that could give people a pretty good idea of where you're coming from. So let me jump right in. You have said on some occasions that I've been part of that you think it is both possible and perhaps more even likely that an angry, bitter, disgruntled, you can use other words, working class mass of the American people who have been looking to the right wing for solutions, who have been getting angry and blaming immigrants or the government or those of us that are secular or those of us that aren't white for our troubles and our problems, but that there's a good chance that we may see a switch in which capitalism and the economic system within this society becomes the whipping boy, becomes the object of criticism as causing the dilemmas and difficulties that so many Americans face. Am I right about that? Is that something you are thinking and seeing as you analyze American society?
Absolutely. And, you know, I have trouble sometimes trying to both communicate the fact that I am deeply pessimistic about what's happening within our political culture and also optimistic by what is happening in our political culture. And what I continually point to is this. I'll do an interview sometimes, Dr. Wolf, and people will say to me, can you believe how much distrust there is in our institutions? And can you believe that Donald Trump created this distrust? And I say, yes, I can totally believe why this distrust is there. It's earned. And Donald Trump didn't create it. Donald Trump has taken advantage of it. And the billionaires who support him and are pushing forward an agenda that is authoritarian through both the Republican Party and through parts of the Democratic Party, they have completely obfuscated how things have occurred so far. And they've created what I like to refer to as a faux populistic movement, MAGA, Make America Great Again, Trumpism, whatever we want to call it. And like other movements in the past, other right-wing movements that look a lot like MAGA, what has actually happened is that the people who are responsible, the institutions, the elites, whatever we want to call them, the people who are responsible for getting us to this point of not just austerity, but oppression and brutality, they have created sort of a fake reality in which the things that they themselves have caused are now being blamed on basically their political enemies, people of color, women, LGBTQ Americans, immigrants, deep state conspiracies, whatever we would like to call it. And so what I look at is that this distrust in institutions tells us that there's fertile ground for something of a nascent left to be formed. And what needs to happen at this point is a wrestling with the through lines of this exploitation, starting to understand that the worker has exactly the same root of their problems as all of these other oppressed groups that are being blamed for the situation as it is. And what I've come to realize is with the burgeoning labor movement, with the protest movement we're now seeing, with a lot of people rejecting conventional politics and conventional narratives, I think that we have a situation that history tells us is very, very fertile for something to grow, an alternative to be demanded by the people. And when that has taken place in the past, it has come from a distrust of institutions. We have seen it paired with the rise of these right-wing faux populistic movements. And most of the time, the rise of those faux populistic movements also coincides with the rise of an actual democratic populistic movement. So I think that there is a real possibility at this point of things starting to gain traction.
Okay. It's very, very important. I just want to underscore what you're saying, because one can easily detect among the huge broad sectors that are basically the left in the United States. And I keep suggesting to people much larger than you might imagine, because the very things you just pointed to include a media downplaying of everything that comes from the left and hyping everything that comes from the right. Are there things you would call distractions? Are there effective ways that this system distracts people from progressive or democratic solutions to their problems? And if there are such distractions, what are they? Do they bear any resemblance to the circuses and all of that that we associate with ancient cultures keeping their people down?
Well, I think it all boils down to convenient fantasies. You know, one of the terms that we've thrown around already is the idea of the left. And I think anybody who understands history and actual politics understands that the left, an actual left, has been systematically destroyed since pre-World War and post-World War. They've been effectively neutralized and kept from any sort of meaningful representation in government. That is both through the control of politics and narratives and also straight up assassinations and subterfuge. But what we're talking about now, this idea of things that could be changed and a left that could possibly change things, this is largely a grassroots thing that has been kept off of our airwaves. It hasn't been given any sort of meaningful, actual coverage. It's slanderous in every regard. And what is replacing it instead is this duopolistic conventional narrative that everybody sort of tunes in for. Our politics have become prestige TV as Democratic Action has been undermined by neoliberalism. You turn into cable news almost out of fandom, almost in order to watch the heroes and the villains involved in a morality play. Meanwhile, widespread entertainments, they do a couple of things. One, they go ahead and they give us escapist fantasies. This is one of the reasons why comic book movies and science fiction and all of these things are on the rise, but they're also detached from any sort of actual political meaning or power other than going ahead and reinforcing old nationalistic capitalistic mythologies. Then, meanwhile, you have an entire group of people who are sort of being fed almost like a faux progressive idea. You know, they watch a lot of shows that provide representation, but also like back in the days of Jim Crow, in which we had entertainments that showed like a world that wasn't an apartheid. We now see a lot of these entertainments that give people sort of a relaxing fantasy that things are actually better than they are and allows them to sort of live in their own tailored realities. These entertainments are really, really dangerous. They keep people from really engaging in democratic action. They keep people from engaging with their own privilege and starting to understand what's actually happening around them. And so as a result, America is retreated more and more into these entertainments as the situation has gotten worse.
Do you find there, because you mentioned it a minute ago, is this being broken up by the labor movement suddenly waking up over the last two or three years by suddenly seeing, you know, your neighborhood Amazon warehouse or your neighborhood Starbucks organizing, unionizing, colleges and universities doing it on a scale that I have been a professor all my life. I've never seen this level of unionization, overwhelming victories in elections and so by unions. Is this a sign that this comfortable retreat is breaking up?
I believe so. And I think one of the things that has been happening, first of all, absolute solidarity to these workers who are unionizing as well as students who are protesting, these atrocities. One of the things that we keep seeing is that this is sort of happening outside of the lens of the camera. The UAW has been incredibly aggressive under Sean Fain. They've been organizing even southern automobile factory plants, which is almost unheard of. And you're seeing this march in unionization start to gain momentum. You're starting to see young people rejecting, you know, this sort of conventional status quo. And what we're seeing, Dr. Wolf, is we're seeing a huge reaction to this. And, you know, it's everything from intimidation to sort of bipartisan slandering. And I think if you look back on past social movements and particularly past labor movements and leftist movements, what you see is that this is the normal reaction that takes place. It tells us that things are actually getting through, that things are actually gaining momentum and gaining power. And I think we should take some joy in seeing that not only is it starting to show up on our televisions and on our coverage, but that the sort of bipartisan disgust with it, the slandering of it, tells us that this is seen as dangerous. This is seen as something that can go ahead and destabilize the status quo. And I think we should take comfort and joy in that while also recognizing how dangerous of a moment this actually is. Because when the conflict comes through, anybody who's paid attention to labor movements or social movements or democratic movements, they recognize there's not just slandering, there's not just attacks, but there's actual violence that comes along with this. So we're in a perilous time, but I happen to believe it's a pretty optimistic time as well when you see this energy gathering.
I have friends in the Christian evangelical movement. I've had them all my life. And I have always gotten from them the information, which I wouldn't get any other way, that there is an active left-wing evangelical community that feels very marginalized and very on the edge of the mainstream, which is to the right. But they also insist that the potential for a shift is always there. It's in the liturgy, they say. It's in the literature, and it's in the history. They like to point out that one of the largest constituencies of American socialism at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century was Protestant clergy in the United States who found their way to socialism as an expression of the Bible as they read it. Do you see anything there in that part of the society as movement in the direction you're talking about?
Well, I'm an ex-evangelical. I was raised up in some really gnarly rural evangelicalism that gave me insight into where we were going in terms of conspiracy theories and growing authoritarianism. And I've talked to a lot of pastors and preachers who have looked up and they looked at their congregations during the rise of Christian nationalism, which is in and of itself an authoritarian ideology. And they wondered where it came from. The truth is, Dr. Wolf, that the seeds were sown there. A lot of the same people who are leading these churches or grew up in these churches recognize this as coming from their own houses of worship. The question now is whether or not the evangelical movement or Christian movement in this country can look in the mirror and recognize their own part in how they've created this. It's the same thing with the people who've created the status quo we're in. It's a really hard thing to recognize that you played a role in things getting worse, and it takes a long look in the mirror. It takes introspection. I'm starting to see some movement in that direction. I'm starting to see people who are pushing back against this and rejecting what it has become. But it's going to be a long road. But one of the things we find, again, with burgeoning labor movements and protests and social movements, is that almost always they are joined by people from places like the evangelical community who recognize their own role in creating these problems. And eventually they start to gather some momentum there.
Well, as usual, everything, the time has gone so quickly. But I want to thank you, Jared Yates Sexton, for the work you do, for the voice you come with, for the very fact that you have this articulated position, given that you've come from a place pretty far removed from it. I feel that way myself in my own upbringing, and that gives me the very hope and the sense of joy that you refer to that I don't want to end the program without thanking you for. So again, thanks for your time. And I'm quite sure we'll be doing this again in the not-too-distant future.
Thanks so much, Dr. Wolf.
And to my audience, as usual, I look forward to speaking with you again next week.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for May 16th to the 21st. Thursday, Christy Lee at Arborcrest, the Aspen Kai Band at Brickwest Plaza, and The Rub at Zola. Friday, the Rock Club Spring Showcase at the Big Dipper, Deb the Wolf at Zola, Polly O'Keary and the Rhythm Method at the Bullhead, Carly Fairbanks at the Baby Bar, Bologna at the Chameleon, and Troubadour and Bristol at Zola. Saturday, Working Spliffs at Chan's Red Dragon, Justin Priest at the Bullhead, Brittany Jean at Zola, the Bettys, Gorilla Rabbit and Chicken, and others at Smickland, and The Last Rebel at the District. Sunday, the Spokane String Quartet at the Bing, Spokane is Dead at Zola, and Age of Nephilim at the Big Dipper. Monday, open mic at the Red Room. Monday and Tuesday, open jam at Jackson Street. Tuesday, Jerry Lee in the Groove and Nick Cedar at Zola, Carly Osika at the Junkyard, and Uh-Oh and the O-Wells, Mama Llama, and others at the Big Dipper. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
Well, I don't lie and I don't cheat. There's a lot of lovers I still gotta meet.
Thin Air Community Radio and Brick West present Brickfest 2024, Saturday, June 1st, 2 to 10 p.m. Get ready to start your summer with our first annual Brickfest live music festival. 10 acts, 2 stages featuring Vika and the Velvets, London Get Down, Jinx, Warren Dunes, Last of the Red Hot Mamas, The Holy Broke, Rosie Sircone, Jimmy Nudge, Kyle Richard, and August to August. This is going to be huge, so mark your calendars for Brickfest on June 1st, Brick West Plaza, 1318 West 1st Avenue in Spokane.
We might take a trip across the sea, or you could be a secret just for me.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots, global, unembedded, independent, international investigative news hour. Tune in Monday through Friday right here on KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio, 8 to 9 every weekday morning and repeated at 5 p.m. Also streaming online at kyrs.org.
Hey,
this is genders.
KYRS.
Next up, this is Warren Dunes with their song Take the Train.
You can catch Warren Dunes live at BrickFest, Saturday, June 1st, right here in Spokane at Brick West Plaza.
I take the train, 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 take the train to the bottom of the ocean. Train, take the train, train, take the train, take the train. The devil meets me there. Hands me a pair of slippers. Says if I only had the time.
Safety. 63% of Washington households own pets.
Our devotion to our pets means prioritizing their safety. When pets are off their leashes, they are put at high risk for ticks, parasites, conflict, and deadly interactions with other animals.
According to BusinessWire.com, 71% of pet owners said that they are concerned about their pet's safety.
Become more informed by visiting SpokaneHumaneSociety.org.
Busy beating people to a beat machine, yeah. Somebody loaded up your plastic gun. I see that monkey got you shooting in your blood. Using bullets on the dumb dumb gun.
You ever shot a thing called love?
not your man. Got dudes wildin' out all over the gram. If you're getting grams from grams, it's not the plan. Your weak link will get you stuck for the bread with no jam. To your P's and Q's, not the P's and J's. Loose lips and shits like every day. It's the way it be, and it is what it is. Keep discreet in the street when it comes to your biz. Selling cold is the mode, stuff is the way. Need to know basis, what can I say? Young dudes in the game, on the clout and the fame. Care more about the name so they get it on the chain. They wear it in the video and wear it on the block. They wear it to the studio and wear it to the shop. It's the way it goes. When you flaunt too much, they just talking all your moves cause they want your stuff. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. 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 What you expect? Dudes hunt for the check. Trying to get at least a piece of everything you collect. Never broadcast your games or you'll definitely get the pain. Better to look like a lame than food in the game. Make it on except the corn like stuff is a must. I trust no one because everyone has luck. Everyone has greed. It's so-called needs. Wolves trying to feed on those who succeed. Success breeds jealousy is part of our nature. Live life lavishly, just don't tell haters. Even the day one can become a strange one. People flip every day, at least where I'm from. So there's moves to be made. I just make them. Don't tell me your rules, I'll just break them. I know my real dudes, y'all just fake friends. Stab you in the back while y'all shake hands. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. 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 I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. I step on earth with my space shoes.
With your space shoes?
With my space shoes. With my space shoes. With my space shoes. With my space shoes. With my space shoes.
Good music is good music and doesn't need to be put in a box. Welcome Home is a multi-genre folk show, Thursday mornings from 10 to noon right here on KYRS. You'll hear blues and then bluegrass, gospel next to zydeco, soul, country, Cajun, folk, and rock, all in the same set. Roots music, old and new, for your soul to enjoy. Welcome Home, Thursday mornings, 10 to noon on KYRS.
Thank you. Tell us past his red lips and pearly white teeth. Stop by the river whenever you come near, and I cannot decipher between the thrill and the fear. Stop if it's like a jukebox, so let it stop here. It's wrong, but I want it tonight. Now I have an issue, but I fell in deep. I've run in the distance, I've been advised to keep. To watch to the wolf and the dozing sheep. Wrong, but I want it tonight. Fear and delight. Tearing do, I'll fall in love with you. Fear and delight, all the way through the night. With a little tearing do, fall in love with you. Little boy, I'm gonna be getting his fingers and bones. See, but there's gotta be done. They say the boys have been destroyed, but they weren't. Wrong, but I want you tonight.
seems to whisper within this gloom. The falling stones and rubbles will be our future soon. Remember these hustles as time has turned the page, buried so nicely by history's rage.
This is Tom from A Shot of Jazz, and you're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1, 92.3 FM, and streaming at kyrs.org.
We'll be right back.
and one.